There was no pause button on my recording device, so I had to hit the stop button, and I don't know, it split up the recording, so this lecture will be over two recordings. I apologize for the confusion. So let's see, where do we leave off? Well, we were considering whether or not there are any rational ends that are rationally obligatory, right? Now, Kant thinks, of course, there are. He calls them ends in themselves, right? And so what we want to do is discover or try to determine what are ends in themselves. Kant thinks, of course, that I should always treat ends in themselves as ends and not as means. What does that mean? Well, it means whatever ends in themselves happen to be, I've got to treat them as ends, right? And never as a means, meaning that I ought to never use someone as a device or a tool, right? I should never use you as a means to an end, in other words, right? To use someone as a means to an end is to use them like a tool, right? Like a hammer, for example. You know, and you can think about it, this is rather intuitive, right? You know, if you have a hammer, right? Nobody ever says thank you to a hammer, you just use it as a tool, right? Now, you might take care of your tools because you don't want to have to buy new ones, but you don't really think of yourself as having obligations to a tool, something like a hammer or a saw, right? I don't have any obligations. If I want to break a hammer and it belongs to me, then I'm free to do that, right? And without any sort of moral implications. I have no obligations to tools. Now, unlike tools, I do have moral obligations to things, to ends in themselves, right? It's not morally permissible for me to use an end in itself as a mere means, right? And so what does Kant have in mind here? Well, human beings are ends in themselves, right? And so his advice is that we should never treat ourselves, right? Never treat ourselves or anyone else as a mere means to an end, right? But always respect other human beings as ends in themselves, okay? That's essentially what he has in mind. Act always to treat humanity, whether in my own person or in the person of any other, right? Always as an end and never as a means only. Okay. Okay. So I might have mentioned this when we first started to consider the categorical imperative, but Kant thinks the second formulation, right, the formula of humanity, is essentially equivalent. To the formula of universal law. And so whatever answers we derive from the formula of humanity will be the same types of answers we get from the formula of universal law, right? In other words, we're not going to get different answers from different formulations of the same categorical imperative. Now, as it turns out, there have been philosophers who have suggested that that's actually not the case. I mentioned Marcus Singer earlier in an earlier lecture, and he seems to think that the formula of humanity is not quite as versatile, and it doesn't give us the same or even as worthy answers as the formula of universal law. Now, so I don't know that that's actually the case, but there have certainly been other philosophers who have suggested similar things. By contrast, Alan Wood, who is a very good Kant scholar, thinks that the formula of humanity is actually a superior expression of the categorical imperative than the formula of universal law is. So, I don't know. Philosophers dispute these types of questions all the time. You know, and who knows who's right at this point. You know, all you have to know, for me at least, is that Kant thinks that they're equivalent expressions. Whether or not they are is really neither here nor there. So let's see. In order to help you better understand the formula of humanity, I want to go through a couple of examples, right? First of all, notice that there is really nothing wrong with treating people as a means. That may seem like a contradiction given what I've just said, but what we really have to worry about is treating people as a mere means, right? Now think about this. In a sense, you're using me right now, right, to further your educational interests. You know, you listen to these lectures and you take notes and you take my exams and, you know, if everything works out, you get a decent grade and you get through this class, right? But You know, you're still using me as a means. And to be honest, I'm using you as a means, right? You know, I couldn't do this if you didn't sign up for my class. And, you know, so I need a paycheck in some sense. And, you know, you guys help me to fulfill that goal. So we're using each other as means to an end. But hopefully we're not using each other as a mere means, right? We afford one another respect. If, you know, if I were to meet you in some capacity, I'd want to be respectful and, you know, and certainly be interested in what you have to say, you know, and so we afford each other respect, which is to recognize each other as ends as well, right? So I'm never treating anyone as a mere means or as only a means. I want to treat someone with respect, to regard you as an end, while I also use you as a means, right? So here are a couple of examples, right? Imagine that you're in New York City and you hail a cab, and you tell the cab driver to take you to Fifth Avenue, right? So you get in the cab and he takes you to Fifth Avenue, right? And then you pay your fare and you say thank you and goodbye. You've obviously used the cab driver in some sense, but you've also recognized the cab driver as an end, right? You've been respectful. You didn't, you know, call him a raghead or something like that, you know, or I don't know what you might do. But, you know, notice also here that payment in this case would not be a sufficient condition of showing respect. It might be a necessary condition, right? In other words, you give money, and it's required of you to actually pay your fare in order to show respect. But it's certainly not the only thing you have to do to show respect, right? I mean, I could pay my fare and still call someone an asshole, for example. And that would be bad, right? So payment of your fare is a necessary but still insufficient condition of showing respect. What else? I don't know. Going to the doctor would be another example, right? You go and you seek medical attention. You're certainly using a doctor for medical advice, right? Maybe even a procedure involved, and of course he has a particular skill that you need, and you use him, right? Him or her. But again, you afford that person respect at the same time that you use them, and of course that will satisfy the formula of humanity. The point Kant is trying to make is that I should never use someone as a mere means to an end. Not that I should never use anyone as a means. Of course, things that would be off limits, obviously, would be something like slavery, right? I can never own a slave. That's morally forbidden, according to the formula of humanity, right? And so, it wouldn't, I mean, to own a slave is to own a tool. And of course, human beings should not be used as mere means, according to Kant, right? And so slavery is morally impossible, given Kant's categorical imperative, right? And of course that should be rather intuitive to you. Interestingly enough, it seems as though, at least it does to me, that the formula of humanity is very nice. I mean, if Kant is right, then it's an equivalent expression to the formula of universal law. But notice, the formula of universal law doesn't have a lot of, I don't know, intuitive appeal. It's abstract, it's hard to think about whether you can universalize a maxim or not, whether it leads to a practical contradiction. There's a lot of abstraction involved in using the formula of universal law, but here, using the formula of humanity, we just ask ourselves, you know, can I treat someone as a mere means? No, I have to recognize them as an end while I consider them in other respects, right? So I can't simply use someone as a means only, it has, as I said, you know, this kind of intuitive appeal. It's more compelling. Respect for humanity is something we all recognize as a moral duty, and Kant was certainly aware of that. So what I want to do now is, I won't read through those examples again, but the illustrations, if I can just ask you to sort of reflect in memory upon those illustrations again. And I want to run through them again, but this time considering them from the perspective of the formula of humanity. Right? And we'll just reconsider why it is that those maxims will fail, but again, from the perspective of the formula of humanity. So the first example we looked at was the example of someone who's in need of money, right? And they make this promise that they'll pay the money back, but all the while they know that they're never going to pay the money back. So what goes wrong from the perspective of the formula of humanity when I approach a loan officer for money, you know, signing a promissory note, knowing that I'll never pay that money back? Well, again, notice here that I'm using the loan officer or whoever it is that I'm borrowing money from, I'm using that person as a means only, right? I'm not fully disclosing my intentions, which again, those intentions are important, right? They would inform, it's a form of respect to fully reveal myself, especially in a case like this, right? I can't use someone as a means only. You know, and of course, what's my end in this case is to get money, and I'm using the loan officer as a means. I'm also using the institution, right? The financial institution, whatever financial institution it might be, or if it's a friend, I'm going to borrow money from that person, and I'm using that person or that institution as a means of satisfying my goals, without thinking about my obligations to that person or to that institution, right? And of course, this is to use someone as a means only. So that's why it would fail, right? That's why the false promise fails, the formula of humanity in this case. What about suicide? Well, again, I don't think this is the best example, but I'm not going to go into that here in this case, right? What Kant believes, of course, is that to commit suicide is to fail to recognize yourself as an end, right? It's not only the case that I have to refrain from using other human beings as a mere means. It's not morally appropriate for me to use myself as a means only, right? And so, in other words, to commit an act of suicide is to use yourself as a means only. It's a failure to recognize yourself as an end, right? It's a failure of self-respect. So that's why the suicide example will fail the formula of universal law. What were the other examples? The third example we considered, again, we're considering these out of order, but the third example was the example of someone who does not want to help other people, right? We have someone with some form of wealth, and he has decided that he doesn't want to help other human beings, although he recognizes that they are in need, he just wants to be left alone. So in what sense am I failing? In what sense am I violating the formula of humanity in this case? Now think about this for a moment, because it's not as apparent how I'm failing or how I'm violating the formula of humanity in this case, right? Notice that I'm not using that person. If I simply refuse to help someone, if I simply refuse to help anyone, I'm not using them in any sense, am I? So why would it be a violation of the formula of humanity? It seems that it wouldn't be a violation, right? And so we've got to think through this a little more closely. And what seems to be the case is that I'm sorry, my dog is barking, and I'm having trouble concentrating. I apologize. What seems to be the case is that, although I'm not using anyone as a means, it's a failure to recognize them as an end, right? Now, we have to think about what an end is. What is an end in itself? Well, ends in themselves are capable of setting goals, right? That's what a human being is, right? Human beings have particular goals in mind, and if I asked a question about someone who is asking for help, right, someone in need, what would their goal be? Well, it would be a goal to get help, assistance in some sense. And so, to refuse help to someone who is asking for help is to fail to recognize that person's goals, which in turn is a failure to recognize them as an end in themselves, right? So although I'm not using that person as a mere means, right, I am failing to recognize them as an end in themselves. That's why it's a violation of the formula of humanity. Now, the last example we considered was the development of talents, right, and the obligation to develop talents. Of course, here again, we're dealing with obligations to the self rather than obligations to another human being, much like the case of suicide, right? Those are obligations to the self rather than others. And it's interesting to think about having obligated. What obligations do I have to myself? You know, am I morally obligated to act in particular ways toward myself? Those are very interesting questions. I'll come up with another couple of examples here in a few minutes that I think are important to consider, especially as we consider the possibilities of, in sexual ethics. So think about talents and whether or not I have an obligation to develop a talent that I might have. It looks to be the case that what Kant thinks is that if I fail to develop certain talents that I might possess, again, I'm not using myself in any way, but again, I'm failing to recognize myself as an end. I'm failing to take myself seriously as someone who can set goals and then later meet them, right? And Kant, again, thinks that this is a violation of the formula of humanity. So, again, we have a great deal of plausibility here in the formula of humanity. We saw that the formula of universal law also has a great, tremendous intuitive appeal, and now also the formula of universal law, again, having great intuitive appeal. Let me switch gears for just a moment and talk about, you know, obligations to the self again, and what might be the case in terms of obligations in a sexual sense that we have to ourselves, and then I'll consider obligations that we might have to other human beings as well in terms of, you know, what we owe each other in terms of sexuality. I know this is maybe something that you're not comfortable talking about, and many people aren't, and I apologize if that's the case, but, you know, this is a college course, and these topics are, you know, they're of tremendous human import. So, you know, think about something as something like masturbation. Am I violating the formula of humanity when I masturbate? Now, if, interestingly enough, Kant actually believes that you are, right? To masturbate is to actually use yourself as a tool, right? In some sense, and it's a failure to recognize yourself as an end. Now, I'm not going to tell you whether or not Kant is right about that, and a lot of philosophers have certainly disagreed with him over this issue. But it's interesting to think about your obligations to yourself in this sense, right? So I'm not here to tell you whether or not you should masturbate. If you do, I mean, that's totally entirely your business. But it's interesting to think about it through, you know, through the formula of humanity. Is it an instance of using yourself as a mere means to an end? You know, one thing to consider is that, of course, you are setting whatever goal you have in mind, right? So, you know, to masturbate is to certainly try to reach some kind of goal. and of course, you are the person that's determining that goal. So in a sense, it's hard to imagine yourself using, you know, you're not just using yourself as a mere means, you're also recognizing the end that you've set for yourself. And it's interesting to think about how Kant could solve that problem, right? Another thing to consider, this is obligations to others rather than obligations to the self, but it's still within the domain of sexual ethics, is whether or not it should be morally permissible to use a prostitute. Again, notice that, Kant again will say that to use a prostitute is to, and of course I'll just refer to, I know that there are male prostitutes out there as well, but they're far less common, it seems, than female prostitutes. I'll just go with the standard here. Imagine that a particular man engaged a prostitute for sexual favors, you know, in exchange for money. What is that person doing? Well, on an intuitive level, we seem to, I don't know, it's certainly against the law in most parts of the United States. You know, I think Nevada is the only place where prostitution is legal, and it's still highly regulated, of course. I know in parts of Europe, prostitution has been legalized. But, you know, for the most part, here in the United States, we don't think that that sort of thing is, I don't know, it's certainly not legal. Whether or not it's moral is a controversial question, I suppose. But most of us seem to think that it's probably immoral. I think it's immoral, but the reason for that is Kant may have had something like that in mind. Again, imagine this man, the person engaging a prostitute, and in exchange for money, he's asking for sex. It doesn't appear that he's using her as a means only, right? I mean, look, after all, she has an end. I mean, what's the difference between a prostitute and a cab driver, right? I mean, you know, the cab driver has an end. He wants to make a living, right? Taking people around in his cab. Well, the prostitute wants to make a living by selling her body, for sex. And so what's the difference there? Right, and of course, notice earlier I had said that the exchange of funds, the exchange of money, may be a necessary but insufficient condition for respect. Right, so to use a prostitute is to engage in a practice that is already corrupt in some sense. Right, and I think a strong case can be made for exploitation. Right, that that to engage a prostitute for sex in exchange for money is a form of exploitation, meaning that, you know, very few women, if any, make the choice to become prostitutes, because that's the career they want to have, right? And so it's a form of exploitation. Normally, you know, I can't imagine anyone, you know, growing up thinking, I want to become a prostitute, I want to sell my body for sex, you know. You know, I just can't imagine that. Normally what happens is, you know, girls become addicted to heroin or something, and they're using the money to supply themselves with drugs or whatever it might be. And it's a terribly, terribly damaging way to live. And so I think this is what Kant has in mind when he says it's a failure to respect that person as an end, right? Let me say a couple other things with respect to the formula of humanity in terms of what we're obligated to respect, right? People set all kinds of goals, and one question we might naturally think of is whether or not we have to respect all of the goals that human beings set for themselves, right? So is that also entailed? In respecting someone as an end, do I then have to also respect all of the ends that they choose for themselves, right? Do I have to respect all of the goals that you set for yourself? Well, again, Kant thinks no, the answer is obviously no. If someone sets a goal that is immoral, then I'm not obligated in any way to respect that goal. However, if the goals that they have chosen for themselves are moral or even morally neutral, then it would violate the principle of autonomy to try to intercede or to stop that person from pursuing that goal that they have in mind, right? And so we have to be careful, right? In order to preserve a person's autonomy, we have to respect their goals, but again, we don't have to respect any goal that would seem to violate the principle the categorical imperative itself. All right. Well, this really ends our lectures at this time. I've enjoyed sharing the principles of utilitarianism with you and the principles of Kantianism. I hope you've enjoyed the class. I think initially I certainly bit off more than I could chew. I think our syllabus was a little bit too ambitious, which is why I pulled back, and I think a lot of you were satisfied with that. At least I hope that's the case. So I'll be sending emails out with instructions about the final exam, and I'll also provide you with review for the final exam, and you can look for that tomorrow morning, I think, along with the final exam. And of course, by the end of the week, you'll have to turn that in. Okay, so thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.